What goes on behind the scenes in Pacific politics and how does it affect us? Each week, Politalk dives straight into the tough questions, like who is actually stepping in to save people from sorcery accusation violence in Papua New Guinea?
So she was gasping for air inside the people in a group there, and then they accused her, like, you must be the sorceress.
To listen, search Politalk in your favorite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
Have you ever had to go through the awful experience of seeing a loved one suffer from a disease like measles or polio? Getting vaccinated is a simple step that prevents these diseases. But in parts of the Pacific, not everyone is able or willing to access vaccines. According to the World Health Organization, rates vary depending on the country and the vaccines. For example, in Papua New Guinea, the rate of coverage for the polio vaccine is 52%, dropping to 42% for the third dose. And in Samoa, where there was a deadly measles outbreak in 2019, the rate of coverage for the measles vaccine is 84%, falling to 60% for the second dose. Whether it's combating hesitation or limited access, health authorities are working hard to vaccinate as many people in the Pacific for as many preventable diseases as possible. I'm Natasha Metten. Sisters, let's talk about the life-saving importance of vaccines. The HPV vaccine, which protects against the sexually transmitted illness human papilloma virus, was introduced in Tonga in 2022. The vaccine is given to girls aged 10 to 17 to protect them against infection once they become sexually active. One of the reasons the vaccine is so important is that HPV can lead to cervical cancer, and in the Pacific, cervical cancer is the number one cause of cancer-related death among women. Dr. Ofa Tukia is the Chief Medical Officer for Public Health in Tonga.
These infections is usually cause infections on the skins, but mostly in the moist surface of the mucous membrane. And that's usually happen in the genital area where it can cause cervical cancer. Because that was the purpose of this HPV vaccination program here in Tonga, is to prevent cervical cancer. Because that's a public health issue here in Tonga.
The uptake for the vaccine was slow to begin with. Has that improved in recent years?
Because we started with this vaccination rollout in November 2022, and we have been struggling trying to achieve our target, of which we aim at 80% of the eligible young girls within this age group. Unfortunately, we're still struggling because there are still people hesitant to vaccinate their young girls, their children. So we kind of are trying to work collaboratively with other stakeholders and especially with the community to see how are we going to improve our coverage. And it was after 2022 up to 2023, the coverage was still around 20 or below 20%. Even up to last year, early last year, it came up to 24%. And then we decided to conduct a national campaign where we engaged key public figures and community influencers to engage in our campaign. And then after that campaign, it was launched around August last year, I think. And then after that campaign, the coverage came up to 54%. Yeah, and I think the campaign, there was a positive impact on the campaign, but still a lot that need to be done to achieve this 80% that we are aiming at.
And for the campaign, did you include church leaders in it?
Yeah, church leaders and our royal family. Because you know how we still respect our royal family here in Tonga. So we engaged the princess, and also we engaged the daughters of our grand prince in the vaccination. When the daughter was 10 years last year, and then we kind of publicized the event of getting her vaccinated, just in a way to get the public see that this royal family, which is the lead and the head of our nations, they accept these vaccines and they are now vaccinated to be protected from this cervical cancer. And then we also engaged the church leaders in the campaign and also some key influencers in the community, church leaders and teachers. Teachers were also part of our campaign because of these school-based vaccination programs. Eh? But still, we still face challenges of those strategies.
Doctor, how important are churches in Tonga to getting the message out about the vaccine for girls?
Because, you know, church leaders here in Tonga, they have some kind of a special power to influence the members of the congregation. And we identified that in our response to COVID-19, because we face all the challenges of misinformation being spread around on social media and Facebook. It's kind of affect our service deliveries there, and it's reduced the trust and the confidence of the people of Tonga on the Ministry of Health Service. And I think that that's a positive side of our programs here in Tonga, especially our public health as programs, because there's already an existing platform with the community through the church leaders. There's a partnership held between the Ministry of Health and the church leaders, National Church Leader Forums, where all the 15 church leaders here in Tonga are members of this forum. And we already established a partnership with them. So we used this platform in our COVID-19 response, in our risk communication and community engagement program. And then since then, like the momentum of the collaboration still ongoing up to this vaccine rollout, the HPV vaccination rollout. And then we use the same platform in these programs. And yes, they still fully support our work. But you know, the widespread of this misinformation, there are some anti-vax here in Tonga and also some opponents to the vaccination programs. It's so widely spread, and it's severely affected the Ministry of Health's ability to deliver timely and accurate information to the public, to address those misinformation. So it's beyond our capacity to compete with this misinformation that's widely spread on social media. Yet we're still working together with these church leaders to achieve our targets.
And you've mentioned misinformation. How high is the level of trust generally for routine vaccinations in Tonga?
The trust on routine vaccination is high. It remains high, but we are seeing families. There are a few families that are coming up to with these hesitancies for vaccination. And it's all about this misinformation. And there are different reasons they brought up, but that's include the side effects. And also they believe that this vaccine can promote promiscuity and infertility. Those are the key side effects that they raised. But we have provided fact sheets and share it with the church leaders for them to share with their members and also the teachers and other stakeholders. And we also engaged the volunteers from community as champions to and we train them to assist in disseminating the information on HPV, since they are staying with in the community 24/7, they can have opportunity to discuss more about HPV with the people in the community. And that's what we are working on, to see how are we going to use people in the community to spread the information that we need to get this information reach to the community, and especially to the parents, for them to make a decision on this vaccination uptake.
And HPV is a sexually transmitted infection. Is that one of the reasons there has been hesitation?
Yes. As I said before, that's what they thought. And that was some of the reasons that brought up in the focus group discussion. Because they think this vaccination, since it's sexually transmitted, HPV infection is sexually transmitted, it's like we are promoting promiscuity to the young girls. That's what they believe. But we already provided them with the main purpose of this vaccination. It's not to promote promiscuity, but to prevent them and keep them protected from this infection that may lead on to cervical cancer later in life.
Dr. Ofa, where can they get the vaccines?
Oh, they get the vaccines from the Ministry of Health and also the community health centers.
And if someone is reluctant, should they speak to their doctor?
So now as part of this campaign, they do a house-to-house visit and they are taking the vaccine with them. So if after they are discussing about the vaccine, if they agree to get the vaccine, then they do the vaccination at their home. It's now like a house-to-house visit of the public health nurses, just to raise awareness and discuss more about this HPV vaccines. And if they agree to get the vaccine, then they can give it at home.
And what can women in particular do to ensure the girls in their lives are vaccinated against HPV?
So it's like coming back to the role of the mothers. Us as mothers, that's our responsibility to make sure that our young girls are safe and be protected from these preventable diseases like the cervical cancer. And I think we need to provide them with the most accurate and culturally appropriate information so that they make good decision to get their children vaccinated. And I think that's what we need to do. And also we have a women's group here in Tonga that they know how they lobby for the rights of the women. I think these are important people that we need to tap through to help out with the information distribution to reach out to the people out there in the community, to just for them to make informed decision on getting the people accept and vaccinate their children.
Do you have a final message to our listeners about the importance of the HPV vaccine?
Because cervical cancer is the third most common cancer here in Tonga, in our women here in Tonga, and with average of about 17 new cases every year and 6 to 7 deaths per year. And these people, they are mothers and they are young mothers with children. And if they get infected and died, because most of them, they come later with the diagnosis of this cervical cancer, and when they passed away, there's a huge impact on the children, the future of the children and the family. And that's why because it's getting, the trend is getting, it's increasing. And that's why we are working tirelessly with development partners to see if we can try to increase the coverage of this vaccination program together with screening, alongside screening program for young women, so that we can see if we can eliminate cervical cancer as a public health problem here in Tonga at the stage of this rage of incidents and tests from cervical cancer in Tonga. And that's my advice for the mothers, especially the parents, because they can make the decision, both the mother and the father, to encourage their children to get this vaccination, especially at this young age, before they are exposed to the infections. It's more effective, and it's about 97% to protect them from this cervical cancer. It is preventable, and I think this is the time for us to get our young children, and especially our young girls, vaccinated so that they are protected from this preventable disease, the cervical cancer.
That's Dr. Ofa Tukia, the Chief Medical Officer for Public Health in Tonga. Last year in Papua New Guinea, poliovirus began circulating again 18 years after the country eradicated the virus. In PNG, the vaccine is given through the mouth and needs to be administered 3 times. As I mentioned earlier, coverage of the first dose is at around 52%, but this drops to 42% by the third dose. Judy Alingo is the nurse in charge for the Medang Town Clinic.
Polio is a virus that causes paralysis to the, especially the kids. It's a virus that causes the child to become paralysis. So that's why we have this rollout in Medang. Because there was a confirmed case in Morobe, the first confirmed case. So that's why we have to roll out this polio program in Medang to vaccinate the kids at the age of 0 to 10 years.
So how does it spread?
It spread through the child or the feces when there's no personal hygiene, through the feces with by water, the hands, food, or flies. They bring this into the food stuff and the children take it, especially when they go to the toilet, they don't wash their hands when they clean themselves. It's a personal hygiene, poor personal hygiene.
And Judy, tell us more about the polio vaccine. How is it administered?
It protects the human beings, especially children, and reduces the risk of polio outbreaks and keeps community safe from polio-causing paralysis.
And what age is it given?
The age are from 0 to 10 years.
Is it a needle?
The first round is drop. We give them by drop. The school age groups are involved too.
And in Papua New Guinea, who has access to the polio vaccine?
It's only for now, the cases from we are doing it, it's only the children, 0 age to 10 years.
Is it being rolled out across the country or is it in Medang only?
It's across the country.
Since the polio vaccine rollout, Judy, how many people did you manage to cover or the coverage rate of the polio vaccination?
For Medang District, we cover 70% and 30% not covered.
So was that the coverage rate that you and the team were hoping for?
No, we are hoping for 95%.
Were there some challenges that you faced in trying to acquire the targeted coverage that you were working towards?
Yes. One is logistics. Two is manpower. There's many aging people are working and we have a problem with manpower, because they cannot go out further inland. Number 3 is transport and fuel. They are the things that are causing us not to reach more inland and also nearby areas because of transport and fuel problem.
And why is the level of trust among the community in this vaccine? What is the level of trust?
The level of trust is it's us. We have to go and give them the good awareness.
And is there a culture of misinformation around the polio vaccine in Papua New Guinea?
Oh, yes. You know, PNG people. PNG people, they believe somebody will go in and give them wrong information. So we are trying our best to tell them not to believe in that.
How do you speak to reluctant people about the vaccine? What do you say to try to let them know that it's safe and good for the children?
We have to go back and sit with them and talk to them. You know, we have to say, show them the posters that, you know, disabled beginning, paralysis beginning. Then they start, you know, bringing the kids out. telling them that if your kids happen to get this disease, you have no time to move around. You have no time to go for any, do any work. From there, they feel that, oh, they have, the kids have to go immunize.
As well as vaccines, what can be done to prevent the spread of polio?
Our personal hygiene is very, very important. We need to give them a personal hygiene, a health education message to them. Like I have mentioned, water. Water is one of the problems. They can get polio very easily. Food, stuff, toilet, use of toilets. If they haven't got a proper lid, the fly sits and carried out. All these things, we have to give them a good health education awareness to the communities.
What is your message to the general public or anyone who's listening about polio and the vaccine rollout? What is your message to the listeners?
My message is that every parent should come, should understand and bring their kids to get the polio drops and the injection as well for the good prevention.
That's Judy Alingo, the nurse in charge for the Madang Town Clinic. Despite hesitation and the challenges to access, vaccination coverage in the Pacific is not all bad news. In Fiji, coverage of most vaccines sits above 90%. So how have they managed to achieve such high vaccination rates when other countries in the region struggle? Sister Litiana Volavola is the National Program Manager for Immunization in Fiji.
The immunization program is very strong. It's been achieved, you know, when we say 95.2% for measles, 95.2% is achieved when we have that understanding between the health worker or the nurses that administer the vaccines and the parents. The parents understand through interpersonal communication and any opportunity to talk about the benefit and the value of the vaccine against the risk and the cost, which they understand and they consent to their children being vaccinated. But any child that's less than 5 years, we don't need a written consent. It's just verbal communication in the health center, which we tag them to 5 key messages before we administer vaccines. And that's if they were to come to the next clinic, then what the date would be. And we're specific on the date. And now we're moving into time appointment times, how many more vaccines to complete, where to go to, what side effects are expected and what to do with it. So this has been reiterated all the time. And for me, that's key to the success of the continuity of parents, you know, consenting or attending the clinics and having their children vaccinated. And another thing, if the health center or the fixed site is not accessible to them, we conduct outreach clinics. And the other component I wanted to share is the parents, we open up to the parents if they move full holiday or any occasion or anything. If they move, that they take the child health record card with them and visit the nearest health center if any immunization is due or any clinic visit is due. And so that's how we open up with the parent. We're not rigid. This allows us of flexibility, and we're glad that the parents do work with us on that. So I feel that's how we have been able to maintain this with our parents.
What is the community's attitude towards vaccinations?
Oh, it's interesting. COVID was good, but like I shared earlier on, we just conducted in 2024 our EPI coverage survey, and the findings were very interesting. We keep reminding ourselves that the coverage survey was conducted to children born during COVID. So it was interesting to hear the findings of, you know, that affected their behavior as to who they would listen to, that affected the parents' decision to listen to the nurses or healthcare workers or listen to the pastors or anybody else, you know, like faith-based coming in. And these we're looking at the behavior of parents as to who makes the decision for them. But then again, it's interesting that on the whole, that apart from social media, the findings said that the community, the healthcare workers, were the next trusted, reliable sources of information that they found if there was anything. And, you know, COVID brought a lot of misinformation, disinformation. But to me, the coverage was maintained because even though vaccination was being conducted on the other side with COVID, parents continued to access the facilities and bring their children for routine immunization. During that time, we had a pocket of measles outbreak, but then the community said, that's not measles, that's COVID. And we said, no, the pediatric doses has not arrived into the country yet, and this is this. So we had to work around looking at the disease and going through to the community on that. It worked out well, but it's one thing that we continue to reiterate all the time, even on social media, that we talk about the benefit and the value of the vaccine against the risks and the costs as we promote all vaccination. Yeah.
And Sister Litiana, do you encounter vaccine hesitancy, particularly on social media?
Not much now, but we still do have pockets of areas. In the 2013 EPI coverage survey, there's about, we found out that there was a 0.9% of hesitancy that was coming through faith-based. So we picked that up and, you know, part of our strategies in moving forward was to visit faith-based organizations and just speak to them. And that was one other thing that we picked up again during COVID. And it was interesting that some came around and got themselves vaccinated. The others were still there. But we try and work around with these civil societies and faith-based organizations. And as part of building back a better strategy for Fiji, after COVID, we did conduct a training called the Vaccine Champions. And this was assisted by the NCRIS team, the National Center for Research and Immunization, Dr. Margie Danchin and her team, whereby they came to Fiji and conducted a vaccine champion training. There were about 35 participants. And so these were just not nurses. They were community workers. There were people from all segments, you know, just training them, just taking them through, talking about vaccines and their benefits, again, against the risk and the cost. And it was very interesting because we may talk as health personnel only reaching to a certain level, but training these people who could go out and just continue to share the messages and see the uptake as people come around later on. So it's one thing that's reiterated all the time. But yes, there is hesitancy, and we continue to address them all the time.
Can you explain why vaccines are so important?
Our Ministry of Health vision is a healthy population. How do you achieve a healthy population? For Fiji, we have not even reached a million yet. We are just 903,000+. And out of that population, if we have to segment them per population, I have almost 18,000 children to vaccinate them according to the schedule. And that's just one. The next segment of the children attending school, which is approximately another 18,000. And so using that data to vaccinate them. And for us, the vision is really to reduce the burden of vaccine-preventable diseases in Fiji through the immunization program and contribute to the health of our children. And so it's very important that we give them that foundation to be protected against vaccine-preventable diseases and that good start in life, apart from other areas like nutrition and developments and all these other things. So if we can use the proactive support of immunization in terms of protection, then why not to give them that protection at birth and, you know, throughout the lifetime through the vaccines that we have. But vaccination is an important component, and everybody talks about immunization as a cornerstone for public health. Right? Programmatically, we totally agree with that. And it's part of the Healthy Island Initiative for the PICs that we nurture children in body and mind, and this is one of the nurturing center support in protecting our vulnerable population. And not just with the vaccine preventable diseases that we have in Fiji, but if there was any outbreaks from other countries, and achieving 95.2%, then that gives us a herd immunity to protect our own population, which is very, very important.
That's Sister Litiana Volavola, the National Program Manager for Immunization in Fiji. Thanks to my guests today, Sister Litiana Volavola, Judy Alingo, and Dr. Ofa Tukia. Wherever you are in the Pacific, getting yourself or your children vaccinated is so important. It protects you and those around you from serious infection and helps to prevent outbreaks in your country. Sisters Let's Talk is presented by me, Natasha Metten. Our supervising producer is Kim Lester. Our executive producer is Faleangafulu Ingastunsna. Sisters Let's Talk is an ABC Radio Australia production. We acknowledge the Yagara, Turrbal and Darumbal peoples on whose land this program is produced. Emtasol na lokimu next time.